Miss an interview? Listen to it now at 1043thefan.com. Brought to you by First Bank. You work hard for your business, so should your bank. Talk to a First Bank business specialist today. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC.
Thomas Harding joins us now from MLB.com. You can follow him on Twitter, Harding_@_MLB. And Thomas, obviously out on your social media, you were struck by some of the things that Ian Desmond was saying as he opted out of the season. And I don't think there's any question his wife is pregnant. Okay, he's out. That's not even a discussion. But the rest of what he talked about, it kind of feels like some of this has been sitting around when everyone in baseball sort of knows that these are challenges, and they're not often addressed head on, are they?
No, they're not. They're not often addressed head on. And the game culturally has changed a lot over my lifetime, really. And, you know, he's talked about the cultures in the clubhouse, and also when he grew up playing baseball, one of two, African-American kids on the team. And the team would chant white power before the game. I mean, this has gone on in this sport for a while. And you know, he's talked about the lack of opportunity for young people, which certainly I can second him on that. He's talked about the world. There is a lot on this man's mind. And I think that being able to step back and spend some time with the family. His wife is pregnant. His kids have a lot of questions because there's a lot going on in the world. Hey, I have a 21-year-old, and he has a lot of questions. I mean, it's an opportunity for him because he has always been a guy to me that has felt like baseball is something he does, but he's always wanted to make an impact, so he's going to try to do that this year.
Well, obviously for the Rockies, that means that they are out there, one of their outfielders and a guy that has some versatility. Let's move away just for a moment before we get back to Desmond's story and look at what that maybe does for the Rockies. They submitted a 52-man camp roster. They know they're going to add to it. But in this case, now that they know they won't have Desmond all season, what does that change, especially now that they have a DH this year?
Well, you've got a couple of young bats that have shown some promise at the major league level. They would be Ramel Tapia, who his numbers turned out pretty good last year, even though there was a lot of up and down with that. There was some wild fluctuations, but it turned out decent numbers. And also, Sam Hilliard came up toward the end of the season and gave them some power, and you're always looking for power. The other guy that I would mention in the mix there in that outfield is Jonathan Daza. Jonathan Daza is the best defensive outfielder that the Rockies have in their organization. Offensively, he did not do a lot last year, did not put the balls in play hard. In spring training, the numbers were good, but I don't think he was quite there as a hitter. But it certainly would be an opportunity for him to come up and establish himself at the major league level.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I was thinking of Hilliard myself. Last week, we were talking to Jenny Kavnar, and that was one of the guys that we were really intrigued to see, obviously, even before the Desmond story broke. But looking at the way the Rockies are going to go, obviously, we know that Charlie Blackmon is recovering from COVID-19. He's expected to be okay. Do you expect to see Blackmon in that DH spot often, given the defensive abilities of some of the guys you just mentioned?
I'm not sure that you would see him there often. I think that after coming back from this, there's a bit of a wild card. And if you've seen some of the other athletes, I mean, you look at the NBA, Rudy Gobert, who says he's still dealing with some tightness in his chest, I believe it is, coming back to the NBA. So there's a wild card with anybody that tests positive here. And I've not talked to Blackmon. He's not actually acknowledged it to me, so I don't know how he feels. But there's a bit of a wild card there. I thought that as the season continued, Blackmon moved from center to right field last year. I thought early on it took him a while to get used to playing right field. And I looked even statistically in the last 3 months of the season, really, from July through July, August, and September. He turned out to be a pretty good right fielder, so they don't have to do that. I do think that that they want to use Daniel Murphy in that DH role a lot and move Ryan McMahon some to first base. Now, I don't know if it hurts the infield defense or helps it. Murphy struggled a bit last year at first base, but I think he would be in better shape this year because he's not coming off a knee injury and he doesn't have a broken hand. So I think that a lot of times you'll see Murphy in that DH role. But as Bud Black said on the call with us today, and as he said many times, that role could be a floating role. It won't be this guy's a DH in 60 games of the season.
If McMahon is at first and Murphy's the DH, what does that mean at second? Is Brendan Rodgers going to get a really long look, or is this Garrett Hampson's job to lose?
I think that you have three guys there. Brendan Rodgers, obviously the top prospect. And what we saw last year was not really the Brendan Rodgers that had climbed through the minor leagues, because he had a shoulder injury and he tried to play through it and ended up shortening the season and really making him look nothing like what we expected of him. Garrett Hampson, good speed there, plays second really well, I think. And also can hit at the top of the lineup if you needed him to do that. But Chris Owings, who was a mainstay with the Diamondbacks a few years ago, had some really good years. I think there were a couple of years he led the league in triples with the Diamondbacks. He struggled for the last couple of years. Last season, the numbers were really bad with Kansas City and with the Boston Red Sox. But what happened was, by signing the minor league contract with the Rockies, he got back with Dave Magadan, who was his hitting coach when he did well in Arizona. And that guy had a really good spring training before things were halted. So this could be a bit of a rotation, or at least in these in this run-up to the season, a competition.
We're talking with Thomas Harding of MLB.com. And Thomas, when you look at this team, knowing that it's going to be a 60-game sprint, we've looked, and over the past few handful of years, all but the 2018 season, they have been better in the win-loss column after 60 than they eventually finished. Is this team capable of getting that hot start and keeping themselves in postseason contention all the way through?
Well, I think this season is going to be a total outlier for a couple of reasons. Number one, at no point are they going to the East Coast. The talk is that they, and I guess there is a draft of a schedule out, but they would stay the National League West and the American League West. If you look at some previous seasons, now last season, no, but a couple of years before that, and even under Walt Weiss, they did very well on the road in the first month, month and a half of the season. Then they'd have that big 10-game homestand, and it seemed like the magic of hitting on the road or the ability to carry it from home to road disappeared. You're not going to have that. I just think that if you look at the past, I'm not sure that anything is going to be like the past, because there's a virus going around out there that who knows if it's going to hit the top players on teams. Who knows if it's going to wreck a roster? Who knows who will be on the field? I think that as much as we'd like to, I don't know how much you can look at past performance and compare it to this schedule that they're trying to get done in 2020.
Thomas, I brought it up a little bit before you came on, and on your social media account, you talked about it a lot. But the challenge of returning baseball to the average kid, because you look at these specialty leagues, these elite leagues, these teams that travel. I know when I was a kid and playing, there was no way we could afford it, anything like that. Is that primarily what's driving a lot of kids away? And if so, how do you reverse that? Because so many parents are desperate to get their kids either into college or to the pros, and everything tends to all kind of trickle down from there.
Yeah, it is a strange situation, because I do believe that a lot of these travel businesses and the equipment and everything else, they've almost preyed upon parents. And the problem is that when you're a parent, it's the one time you go through it is with your kids. You don't go through it and see all the mistakes. So what's happening is the person that is giving you the advice is a person that's taking your money. And that is a big problem. I mean, I just want to throw out where baseball was when I was young. And baseball was the first sport I went out for. Ended up playing more football than baseball. But your team, we had very nice uniforms. I mean, I'm old enough for wool flannel uniforms, okay? Very nice uniforms. You turned them in at the end of the season. The only thing we bought the cap. We had to have our shoes and our glove. Other than that, everything else, the bats, the helmets, and everything else, the coach kept them. You wore them, you played, then you turned in stuff at the end of the season. Now you have some travel situations where every time the kids travel, not only are the parents responsible for the airfare or whatever, but they buy a special uniform for it that nobody else gets to use. The bats that parents are buying, I think part of the reason is that every batting cage or every league that is involved in travel ball, guess what? A lot of times there's a sporting goods store person sitting on the board making sure the parents are buying. There is so much of this that goes on. And I remember, I think it was a few years ago in the Undefeated, the ESPN site that deals with culture, race, and just a lot of different real life things with sports. And they were talking about why there were few white NBA players. And Kyle Korver had a quote that actually broke my heart being a baseball guy. He said, well, you know, I did play basketball, and it was kind of strange because a lot of my friends were playing the country club sports, tennis, golf, and baseball.
Wow. Yeah, you think of those three.
And for someone just to say that has no association with the game, that's what's happened to our sport. I mean, it seems like we found ways to put people in football gear and get them playing football, but baseball, we really struggle with it. I know I've talked to people at the MLB level about even getting with elementary schools to where make sure that baseball is part of the gym curriculum. I remember, gosh, in the days where kids learned to write cursive, remember that?
Right.
There was a book in my elementary school, and especially to get the boys to do it, they had us write the names of all the Major League Baseball teams. Does baseball even appear in textbooks anymore? I mean, it has been pushed to a specialty so much that it's really bothersome. And when I look at the income levels of kids out there, there are a lot of them, there's no way they play baseball. I mean, there's no way. And baseball took itself from being the game for everybody to being the game for a few. And Ian mentions that in his post.
You've covered this for a long time, Thomas. Is there anything to the idea that, I'll be honest, I don't see it, that you're likelier to be a major league player or a college player with this system?
No, there's nothing to it, because if you look, baseball to me, and because it's so static, and the pitcher's throwing, the batter's hitting, sometimes guys are standing up. Baseball demands more athletic ability than any other sport, because you can go from nothing to having to sprint, jump, throw, maybe even have a collision. It's not like you're doing it all the time where you're prepared for it. You have to be prepared for something that may not happen. That's why baseball has the most athletic ability. Now, if you walked around the clubhouse of a major league team, how many of them played other sports as far as high school, some of them even in college? Most of them did.
Yes.
So the ones that didn't would come from Latin American countries. So just hammering kids with baseball, maybe you've got a chance to get some college money, but that leads to the other problem. At the Division I level, it's 11.7 scholarships for something like 30 players. So to be able to be a college baseball player, which increases your chance of becoming a pro, or just simply gives you the opportunity to play, you have to pay. If you are a high school football or basketball player, there is a greater chance of a full scholarship. And that's another problem that needs to be rectified. It needs to be rectified in baseball. It needs to be rectified in softball for the women, too.
So how does baseball build this up? Because I understand, yeah, that there's an expense involved in making sure you can get to elementary schools and things like that. But it also seems like for baseball, it's an investment in their own future.
Yes, it is. And there are a few cities with the urban youth academies, I think Washington being one of them. There's one in Compton, California, that has produced some major league players. So there's some investment in there. I think there are some structural issues that work against it. I mean, every team has a complex in the Dominican Republic. Why can't there be complexes all over the United States in large cities to where, you know, kids learn how to play baseball? Because a lot of the Latin American complexes the kids never actually sign, but they get a little bit better education. That's what some of the youth academies are doing. Can Major League Baseball be a part of that? I would love to see it. I would love to see also maybe there's a way for Major League Baseball to simply give the money to the NCAA schools for scholarships for baseball and softball players. You don't want to leave the girls out. And obviously with Title IX, you can't, and that's a great thing. But if you're able to do that, then I think there could be a little bit of a trickle down to the high school and elementary school levels. Hey, you may get some opportunities to go to school by playing this sport because that message is out there in football and basketball.
Well, that's really the key, I think. And what you've brought up is interesting, too, because the idea that a lot of these leagues, they can be predatory. And maybe not all of them are. But the truth is that many of them basically are. You're trying to dangle the carrot of some sort of, you know, fame or fortune in front of parents and parents who feel like, boy, if I didn't do everything I could, then maybe I'm letting my child down. And that's a difficult thing to have to manage. And you're right. It does not only line the pockets of people who aren't really that concerned about it, but it keeps an unlimited number of players away from it that are otherwise talented enough to play.
Right. And yeah, I'm not accusing everyone of being predatory in this. I do think that a lot of times people see, business opportunity without seeing the entire picture here, that most of the kids aren't going to go on. I mean, basically what's happened is youth baseball has become the minor leagues. And this is something that obviously is a big controversy in baseball. Why do the minor leagues exist? Why do you carry, 20-plus players at 5-6 different levels? It's so that the 4 or 5 that are going to be major leaguers have somebody to play with. Now, that's what's happened at the youth level, is that you build these academies and these batting cages and these travel teams, and you take a whole lot of people's money to make sure that the few kids who are going to either get drafted or go to college, that you can basically promote off of them. So that's, I think what has happened is that the youth baseball has kind of copied the player development level of the major leagues, where there's way more reason to do that to develop major league players than there is when you're dealing with what you have, the elite 8-year-olds, the elite 10-year-olds. Nobody's that elite at those ages.
Right, exactly. He is Thomas Harding, MLB.com. Follow him on Twitter at Harding _@_ MLB. Thanks so much. Thomas came on a very, very short notice to talk about this as the Ian Desmond story broke late this evening. Appreciate the time, my friend.
Hey, I appreciate it. And those who know me and probably have heard me on the airwaves around here, I'll talk about this anytime because this is something that I think I think we can do for our future, because baseball is a great sport and we need it in more. We need gloves, bats, balls, and more hands.
Well, me too. Count me in. I appreciate it. Thomas Harding, thank you. Have a wonderful night.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right. Make sure you follow Thomas, MLB.com, covering the Rockies for MLB.com, and does an extraordinary job. It's always great to talk to Thomas. He has such a wonderful perspective, both on and off the field, not just about what baseball is doing now, but about baseball in the culture. So looking at those ideas, we talked about colleges a little bit, right? Talked about how that works. Well, what if we were to reform colleges? With the NCAA being up in the air this fall, what if we were to noodle around the idea of changing up these conferences? What would they look like if it was geographic, like what baseball is doing in this season? We'll talk about that next.
You work hard for your business. So should we. That's why First Bank offers commercial real estate loans, business lines of credit, and online cash management solutions. With tools and services designed to make your business run easier, your day could have less this and more this. Visit eFirstBank.com/business to learn more. First Bank, business banking for good. Member FDIC.
First Bank. Banking for good.